Hi, and welcome to the Psychopharmacology Institute podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard Sieber, and this is the place where we share clinical pearls to keep you updated in the field. Imagine you're prescribing an antidepressant to a patient with major depressive disorder. You have carefully explained the benefits, potential side effects, and expected timeline for improvement. Yet, a few weeks later, the patient returns, having not taken a single dose of the medication. What might be going on here? Well, today, we're diving into a fascinating aspect of psychopharmacology that often goes overlooked: the patient's ambivalence towards treatment. This concept is part of a broader approach known as psychodynamic psychopharmacology, which considers the psychological factors influencing medication treatment. We featured an introduction to principles of psychodynamic psychopharmacology 2 episodes ago in early August. Be sure to check it out too. Our guest today is Dr. David Mintz, the Director of Psychiatric Education and Associate Director of Training at the Austin Riggs Center in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Dr. Mintz will be sharing insights on how to recognize and address patient ambivalence in psychopharmacological treatment. Did you know that patients who are ambivalent about their treatment are twice as likely to discontinue medications? And if they experience any adverse effects, that likelihood increases threefold. These statistics highlight the crucial importance of understanding and addressing ambivalence in our clinical practice. But what exactly do we mean by ambivalence? Well, it's not just about patients being unsure whether they'd like to take medication. Ambivalence can extend to feelings about the illness itself and even about getting better, which may have both tangible and psychic costs for some of our patients. For instance, a patient might be reluctant to improve because their symptoms have become a way of communicating their psychological need to feel or be cared for. As we explore this topic, we'll learn how to identify signs of ambivalence, even when patients don't explicitly express it. We'll also discuss strategies for addressing these complex feelings in a way that strengthens the therapeutic alliance and improves treatment outcomes. Remember, if you become a silver or gold member of the PI, you'll gain access to our complete range of content, conveniently available on your favorite podcasting app. Enjoy the flexibility of listening to all of our engaging episodes and stay up to date with the latest advancements in psychopharmacology at your convenience. Now let's hear from Dr. Mintz as he shares his expertise on attending to patient ambivalence and psychopharmacology.
So we've been talking about the technical principles of psychodynamic psychopharmacology. So far, we've covered the first 2 of the 6 principles, avoiding a mind-body split and knowing who the patient is. We're going to move on to next principles. In this section, we're going to begin to look at particularly the issues around ambivalence in prescribing. Now, in terms of ambivalence, it's probably important to recognize that for many and probably most of our patients, there is some degree of ambivalence about treatment. I don't want to take medications, and most of my patients don't want to take medications, so there's some built-in ambivalence just right there. But more than that, our patients, especially many of whom have had negative early experiences or have been harmed by caregiving, you know, I have a lot of worries. And interestingly, a study by a Piquet, a sociologist who interviewed something like 125 patients with a history of depression who had been prescribed medications, did an open-ended factor analytic study where they just asked patients to talk about their treatment with medications. And then they collated the 125 or so interviews and identified 15 themes that kind of ran through those interviews. Of those 15 themes, the 4 most common themes when people discussed their medications were all about being harmed. It took to the fifth most common theme to start hearing from patients about ways they felt their treatments benefited them. So this kind of thing is happening. You know, our patients are bringing in all sorts of complicated, anxious feelings about medications. And we know that the patient's ambivalence is directly correlated with noncompliance. So patients who come in with ambivalence are already, from the outset, twice as likely to discontinue medications and 3 times as likely to discontinue medications if they have any kind of adverse experience at all. But our patients bring in ambivalence is also about illness. When patients are ambivalent about illness, when they do get sick in some way, they might discover there are secondary gains. You know, when you get those lemons, you kind of figure out how to make some lemonade from it. And once that happens, those patients who are getting secondary gains from their illness are less likely to recover. And we know that the patient's readiness to change exerts an important influence on whether or not medication treatment is going to work. And patients can also be ambivalent about caregiving. So they've had early adverse experiences, and early trauma is correlated with increased treatment resistance. And as I said in the previous lecture, there's also legacies of systemic oppression. Patients are bringing that legacy in the form of medical mistrust that makes the patients perhaps less able to make use of the treatments we have to offer. And of course, if we're not mindful, we can also end up enacting those aspects of systemic oppression and actually contributing to the problem rather than helping to fix it. So some of the things that we do around ambivalence is then we want to attend to it. And a simple way to do that early on is ask the patient what their feelings are about taking medications. And very often patients will tell you right away about their ambivalences. And this, again, is not something that should take a lot of time. This can be part of an initial interview and it takes 2 minutes maybe to get a sense for how patients feel about taking medications. We also want to be on the lookout for evidence of ambivalence if the patient doesn't tell us about it. If there's not adherence or patients are bringing in a lot of concern about side effects or other aspects of treatment, or they're having side effects at a rate that doesn't necessarily make pharmacologic sense, so raises questions for us about whether these are nocebo responses. All of those things should alert us to the possibility that there's a degree of ambivalence at play that's interfering with the patient's ability to make healthy use of medications. Once we start to suspect that it may be there, we're looking for whether there may be secondary gains, all the kinds of things that interfere with other more primary rewards from the world. We may want to start wondering whether symptoms are serving defensive functions for the patient or helping to manage intolerable effects. Or wonder whether symptoms are serving as communications or some kind of currency in the doctor-patient relationship. You can imagine a patient who is reluctant to get better because when they come to you as a doctor, you're the one person, the one time in their month where somebody just is interested, concerned, and caring. And so the patient may be reluctant to give up their symptoms because that's their way of saying, I need your care. Or conversely, the patient has a lot of early adverse experiences and a real chip on their shoulder about caregiving. And so they're invested in showing how you can't trust caregivers, you can't turn to caregivers, nobody really helps you, you're on your own. And so that patient may also use their symptoms to try to communicate something about their anger, about the ineffectiveness of caregiving that you can get in the world, including from you, their doctor. Another way to get at ambivalence is simply to inquire, what does the patient stand to lose if treatment works? Now, on this one in particular, I think it is crucial, if you're going to ask this question, that you ask it in the first session or maybe second session, before any transference has emerged, before you've gotten frustrated by their non-response or they've gotten frustrated by their non-response. Because then if you ask the question, what do you stand to lose if treatment works, they hear it defensively and probably rightly so because it starts to have some blame to it. But if you ask that question in the beginning, when you're just curious and trying to understand how their mind works, the patient may be able to tell you, you know, like, well, you know, I really want to feel like I can do it on my own. And so it's, you know, narcissistically injurious to me if I feel like the medication does it for me. And then, you know, you have that to work with. So key points from this lecture, from a psychodynamic perspective, patients, like all people, have conflicts that may complicate many aspects of their lives, including their use of psychiatric care. Ambivalence about medications, doctors, care, or even health itself can contribute to treatment refractoriness. So some of the things that we do around ambivalence is then we want to attend to it. The simple way to do that early on is ask the patient what their feelings are about taking medications. Also be on the lookout for evidence of ambivalence if the patient doesn't tell us about it.
That was Dr. David Mintz discussing the importance of attending to patient ambivalence in psychopharmacology. Let's revisit our earlier scenario of the patient who didn't take their prescribed antidepressant. Armed with the insights from Dr. Mintz, we might now approach this situation differently. instead of immediately assuming noncompliance or lack of motivation, we might explore the patient's feelings about taking medication. We could ask, "What are your thoughts about taking this antidepressant?" This simple question could unveil a wealth of information about the patient's concerns, fears, or conflicting desires. Dr. Mintz emphasized several key points. Let's recap them now. First, ambivalence about treatment is common and can significantly impact treatment outcomes. We should also remember that patients may have ambivalence not just about medication, but about illness, caregiving, and even getting better. Also remember that adverse experiences and trauma, particularly in early life or childhood, can increase treatment resistance. We should vigilantly look for signs of ambivalence even when our patients don't explicitly express it. And finally, we should ask about patients' feelings towards medications early in treatment. This can provide valuable insights to how they think about their diagnosis, treatment, and recovery. One interesting approach Dr. Mintz suggested taking is asking patients, "What do you stand to lose if treatment works?" This question, when asked early in treatment, can reveal potential obstacles to improvement that might not be immediately obvious. Remember, addressing ambivalence isn't about convincing patients to take medication. It's about understanding their perspectives, validating their concerns, and working collaboratively to find a treatment approach that both aligns with their values and goals and supports their recovery. By integrating these principles of psychodynamic psychopharmacology into our practice, we can enhance our ability to provide effective patient-centered care. If you found our discussion today interesting and would like to dive deeper into these topics, be sure to check out the Psychopharmacology Institute's Silver or Gold memberships. With these, you can access video lectures, quick takes, expert consultations, and more to stay up to date with the latest advancements in the field and, of course, earn CME credit. I'd like to thank you very much for joining me today. This is Dr. Richard Sieber, and I look forward to seeing you in our next episode. Bye now.